You're listening to Now I've Heard Everything, interviews from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s with voices from the past.
There are enough writers out there writing the same book over and over again, you know, 2, 3, 4 books a year. I don't want to do that. And that's not why I got to be a writer. I make a great living, but I want to write books that each of them are fresh, each of them have originality.
Author David Baldacci, today on Now I've Heard Everything. I'm Bill Thompson. Well, David Baldacci is best known for his suspenseful political thrillers, almost all of them bestsellers. But about 20 years ago, he was inspired to write a different kind of book. It was actually inspired by his own experience on a long train ride. The Christmas Train is a story about a writer, not unlike David Baldacci, who gets aboard a train and takes a trip that will change his life. Now, in fact, you may have even seen it. It was a Hallmark made-for-TV movie in 2017 starring Dermot Mulroney.
What?
Yeah, I'm taking a train.
All the way to Los Angeles. You can't be serious.
It's for a story.
So you need to be on a train to write a story.
Yes, it's a story about Christmas on a train.
Now, if you like Christmas, and if you like trains, this might be just the book for you to pick up during the holidays. So here now, from 2002, David Baldacci.
It was a fun book to write, and I think it was a good year to have a book like this. I'm sort of glad I didn't have a thriller out this year with all the things that we've had going on. I love trains, and that's really the reason I wrote the book. I've taken the trains all the way across the country and took a lot of notes on it. Didn't know I was ever going to distill it into a book, but then I thought, you know, if I set this during the holidays, I could really make this a great read.
Give us a thumbnail sketch where the plot takes us.
Well, the book is very much, it's humorous. There's a romance, a mystery, adventure, and all the things you'd like in a holiday tale, but basically it's one guy's journey, Tom Langdon. He has to get from Washington to L.A. in time for Christmas, and because of a slight misunderstanding at LaGuardia Security, he's been banned from flying. So he has to take the train, and really it chronicles all the crazy things that happened along the way, all the mysterious people that he meets, the crazy personalities, also the lost love of his life, which is quite a shock for him. And it's got a lot of great things, a lot of great elements to it. It allowed me to use a lot of the notes that I had taken during my own train trip across the country. And trains for a writer are the best there is, because you just sit back and soak it all in. There's something about a train that opens people up, and you could sit there and just accumulate wonderful lines of dialogue and crazy personalities and just situations. And I've written lots of stories on trains and about trains, and The Christmas Train was just something I've always wanted to do.
We certainly got plenty of time to write when you're on a train.
You do. It takes a little while longer, about 3.5 days to go coast to coast on a train.
You know, if you film this in black and white, it really has kind of a 40s or 50s feel to it, doesn't it?
It does. That's the thing about trains. They're nostalgic. They're magnetic, even though most Americans have never taken a train. For me, there's just this feel to it. You feel like you're actually living every moment of the trip. And it's not in a plane, you get on and then you get off and you don't think about what happened in between. But on a train, that's all you think about, is about what happened in between on the journey. And I think we've lost sight of that these days. It's nice to get back to it. It's another reason I like trains.
Sometimes literally going through people's backyards.
You do. You see America. You see the good parts of it. You see the warts. But in particular, like I wrote about in the book, people get on the train and you meet them. Mm-hmm. And you can know as much about them as you want or as little as you want, because people do tend to open up. And a lot of the funny stories that I have in the book, a number of those are true and happened to me on trains. And I just thought it would be nice to share that experience with other people.
There is a town somewhere between here and Florida. I think it's somewhere in the Carolinas, where they've built the downtown of the small town around the railroad tracks. So as you're going down the railroad tracks, you're literally going right down the center lane of the main street in this little town.
That happens a lot. Ashland, Virginia has the same thing. There are a number of cities up and down the line, because a lot of, look at it, towns were built around the railroads, because that's the only reason the towns were there is because the railroads came through there. And particularly in the Southwest, really the trains were the only thing that were moving through there, and people built towns to accommodate that. You just see America, and not only do you see America, you experience Americans getting on and off the train and their backstories and the number of people and the different backgrounds they have. It's enormous on a train.
Yeah, I was going to say that the scenery going by is only part of what Tom is experiencing in this story. Part of it is the scenery inside the train.
And oftentimes that's a lot more compelling.
Yes. Now, there's an interesting cast of characters in here. Now, are these all fictional characters, or are some of these the product of some secretive note-taking on one of your own journeys?
It's a mix of both, I think. Agnes Jo is sort of a fictional, but she represents all the crazy people I've ever met on trains. And he has this mysterious quality to her because as much as people talk to you about themselves, you never really know everything that there is to know about somebody. Roxanne Jordan, you know, the Aretha Franklin of Amtrak. There are a number of people who work for Amtrak or have second lives, and some of them are performers and things like that. It was just a combination of my imagination, people that I met along the way, and sort of using composites to giving you an interesting example of what you might experience on a train.
And also, it wouldn't have worked quite as well if it had been just the Metroliner from D.C. to New York, you know, where it's 2 hours and 49 civilized minutes, you know, as they used to say in those commercials years ago. It almost has to be, for the purposes of a story like this, a cross-country trip, doesn't it?
You need to see the whole package. It can't be fast. This story is not a fast story. It's supposed to be about a trip that takes a long time and takes you to a lot of different places in America and lets you see sort of the whole swath of what the country's about. And a lot of things happen, and I needed a few days to let them all sort of percolate. And in particular, one interesting thing happens at the Raton Pass on the border between Colorado and New Mexico. It was a fascinating journey. I think that people will enjoy taking it.
Without giving away too much of the story, can things like that actually still happen these days?
Well, I think so. I mean, when you have to travel through something like the Rocky Mountains on a train, the plane, you can fly over it. And the only thing you hit occasionally is turbulence coming off the mountains. But in the train where you have to bore through, around, over, things like that can happen, particularly in the wintertime. You know, what happens in there, I don't think has ever happened on that particular route, but it's certainly possible.
Yeah, because you're describing actual trains on actual routes, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. Well, the train route of the Southwest Chief and the Capital Limit are both exactly how they run. And believe me, I know that in great detail.
Now, you must have, in all the times that you've sat there and just had a chance, maybe in the late evening hours as people are starting to doze off, and you see their faces and you realize maybe this one's on the way to meet their lover. Maybe this one's on the way from their having left their lover. Maybe this one's on the way to a business meeting. Maybe this one's about to rob us. You know, all these ideas must be percolating in your mind.
Well, you know, they say there are a million stories in the big city. There are a million more stories riding on a train because the characters and personality, I'm not really sure why it is, but people who get on the train are just interesting people. And they're on that train for a particular reason, and they don't really care if they're getting somewhere fast. And that always intrigues me, particularly these days when you hop on a plane to get somewhere immediately. So the backstories do. And as you look around as a writer, again, that's why it's such a font of just creativity, because you look around and everybody can have a story inside of them. And your imagination as a writer just runs wild.
And there is some measure of suspense in this story.
There is. And I had to put that in because some of the best mysteries I've ever read have been on trains.
Mm-hmm.
They have this closeted sort of claustrophobic mentality to them and a definite list of characters. And just, it's a very close sort of environment. And as you're hurtling down the track in the middle of the night and there's darkness all around, you just don't know what's going to happen next. And I wanted to put an element of suspense and thrills in there for people. It's not my typical thriller, but I do think that some people, as they're reading it, while they're laughing, they also may be perching on the edge of their seats.
After this short break, David Baldacci explains how the Christmas train put his career on a, well, you might say, a different track.
There are now two new ways to listen to Now I've Heard Everything.
Full episodes are now on YouTube. Just search for Now I've Heard Everything.
And if you're on TikTok, watch for the promos we post about new episodes.
Tap the link at the bottom of the video to hear the full episode.
Now back to my 2002 conversation with David Baldacci.
I couldn't help wondering, if you hadn't, in effect, laid the groundwork for yourself with Wish You Well a couple of years ago, could you have gotten away with a book like that? I mean, would maybe starting with, you know, Warner Books, would they have said, oh, come on, David, do you really want to write a book like this? Don't we want another, you know, thriller from you?
Well, I think that writing Wish You Well at the point in my career that I did opened up a lot of doors for me, and I think it made it possible that I could write a Christmas train sort of story and that people would accept it. It's once you're pigeonholed, it's really almost impossible to pull yourself out of that hole. And so I think Wish You Well was very well timed and now has allowed me to do things without damaging myself commercially, allowed me to do things a little bit differently and to expand my horizons as a writer.
you were on, if you will, parallel tracks.
it's true. And believe me, I'm glad I did it that way. Mm-hmm. I enjoy writing thrillers, but I got to tell you, I had so much fun writing both Wish You Well and The Christmas Train that I think it'll make me even better writer in the future.
It has to. I mean, because anytime you can expand push the boundaries a little bit and stretch yourself in a direction that you don't normally go, it's got to make you a better writer.
It does. I mean, there are enough writers out there writing the same book over and over mm-hmm. again, you know, 2, 3, 4 books a year. I don't want to do that. I mean, that's not why I got to be a writer. I make a great living, but I want to write books that each of them are fresh, each of them have originality, and I'm not making widgets. There are too many writers these days making widgets, and that's all they really care about doing.
But I've also sensed from all of your books that you're not just telling us a good story that will probably become a bestseller and maybe become a movie someday. You're also engaging us on a human level and trying to show us, you know, what the human side of a burglar, for example, or something like that, or what it feels like to win a lottery, or something along those lines. It's not just the plot and some characters.
I always like to inform people, and I care a lot about trains. I really do. And Amtrak, is in a precarious situation right now. And a country as big as the United States, we need 3 strong sort of ways to travel around: cars and planes and trains. Right now, we only have 2. Travel by car and travel by plane, and sort of trains are the afterthought. They don't get very much money. And I think that we need to, you know, look at that again. And I think we need to have a strong train system in this country. If for the only reason is that people can just step back and take a breath and, you know, enjoy themselves for a while and taking a trip instead of just rushing. I've got to get there as fast as I can. You know, sometimes we don't have to get there as fast mm-hmm. as we can.
Would the story have been quite the same if it hadn't been set around Christmas time?
You know, I think the book probably has appeal outside of the Christmas season. Certainly there are messages in there about Christmas and what's important. But the bottom line for this story is that the guy who's taking a journey to try to find something, and as happens often with journeys like that, what he finds at the end is not really what he set out to find in the first place. And that transcends all seasons.
And a 5-hour plane trip wouldn't maybe have given him the same opportunity to consider all those possibilities.
No, it would have given him just enough time to read a probably pretty bad book.
Yes. Or to mess up some report for the boss or something along those. Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's a writer.
Yes.
You're a writer. All right. Yeah, I'm sure you've felt some of these same kind of pressures and feelings and things like that he feels.
I have. And train is a good place to do some soul searching. And to, you know, you can meet all the different characters, but a lot of time you just sit in your compartment and you just think. And these days, people don't have a lot of time to just sit and think about things. I mean, as human beings, our greatest strength is our ability to sort of think and reflect on things using our mind. Mm-hmm. These days, we're not really allowed to do that. We're asked to react instantly, and we're not at our best when we do that.
Well, sometimes it takes a forced period of solitude, if you will, for a few days, you know, to get you in that frame of mind.
Right, and was a perfect way to do it, put him on a train.
Is the whole story then just a metaphor for his own journey, if you will, to an understanding of some kind?
Well, I think it was a journey for him to understand what he needed in life and who he needed in life. But at the same point, I think he came to understand that his life before was covering all the evils of the world. And on that train, he found that life is a lot more than that. And there's a lot of good in the world, too, not just the bad. And like his idol, Mark Twain, that he sort of took the trip to finish something Twain never had. Twain was very cynical and tragic near the end of his life because of all the bad things happened to him. And I think he died a cynic. I don't think Tom Langdon, after finishing the Christmas train ride, will die a cynic.
And maybe he won't even need the anger management classes now.
He may never fly again.
Because he's not really a rageful kind of guy, is he?
No, he's not. But I think that everything came to a head. All the modern day things we put up with just came to a head, and he had had enough. And like all of us, at some point, we have the limit where we just, you know, blow. Mm-hmm. And he unfortunately blew at the wrong moment. But at the same time, it was a silver lining because it made him across the country in a way he never would have considered doing before.
It's almost like that gigantic first step of a long journey that maybe he didn't realize he was about to be embarking on.
I think so. And in many ways, he was forced to take it. But sometimes the trips we're forced to take in life turn out to be the best ones for us.
And then there's the larger metaphor of the whole Christmas season itself being kind of a time of reassessment, re-understanding, figuring what kind of journey you're really on to begin with. There's a lot of meaning on different levels in this story, aren't there?
There is, because I think in many ways it was a journey of redemption for him, and to figure out that what he thought had been a gross injustice done to him turned out to be actually a gross injustice that he had done to someone else. And at the end, he figured that out, and his reward for that, if you will, I think, is a complete life.
Are you under an obligation with a story like this to come up with a neater and happier ending than with a thriller?
Well, I think with this story, I'd put him through a lot. And for the message to have any meaning at all to people, and it's a message of hope, I hope, at the end of the book, I had to allow him happiness at the end. If I hadn't, not only I think would I've shorted my character, who I put through so much, the message I would be trying to get about, that if you do take positive steps in your life, you can change things, you can change the way you are and become a better person for it. If I hadn't allowed him to be rewarded at the end, I don't think that message would have gotten across. So I wanted to make sure that message to the end was sincerely and firmly conveyed.
David Baldacci is 63. He lives in Virginia, and he's written nearly 4 dozen books for adult readers and several for young readers as well. Now, you can get a copy of The Christmas Train by David Baldacci by tapping the link in our show notes or by going to our website, heardeverything.com. Now, we may earn an Amazon commission if you make a purchase. Heardeverything.com is where you can also hear my interviews with two other authors who really know how to touch a person's heartstrings. My 1987 conversation with the great Sidney Sheldon.
Someone asked me how to write a bestseller, and the answer is very simple. I don't know how to write a bestseller.
And my 2007 conversation with Jodi Picco about her now controversial book, My Sister's Keeper.
Everyone is a hero in this book, and everyone's a villain, which is, I think, the way it pretty much is in real life, too. You know, we want to blame someone.
And of course, we post new episodes of Now I've Heard Everything every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And you can find us everywhere you listen to podcasts. And thank you so much for listening. Next time on Now I've Heard Everything, with Christmas just about here, we'll revisit my 1990 interview with an actress who collected this Christmas memories of many of her fellow celebrities in a book called Sharing Christmas. My 1990 talk with Deborah Raffin.
Of course, you always relate the holiday season with snow, no matter where you were brought up. Something so nice about if you're lucky enough to have shelter and have food and be near family, to sit by the fire and listen to those Christmas carols.
That's next time on Now I've Heard Everything. I'm Bill Thompson.